south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Today's Expat Files show is brought to you by our good friends at Pfizer. Get the f*** out of here. Okay, this show first goes out on Sunday, January 23rd. Which means we're about 4 weeks away from my February 2022 Expat Insider Seminar. By the way, as usual, we have repeat offenders signed up. We always have repeat offenders. And when people say, Johnny, is your week-long seminar worth the dough? Is drinking from the fire hose worth it? Well, you shouldn't ask me that. You should ask all these repeat offenders why they keep coming back. Because, you know, unlike these gigantic international living seminars where you're just a face in the crowd, where you're lucky to get a few selfies with the speakers at the meet and greet. By the way, I get a lot of feedback from people who go to those seminars. They always say that at the very end, there's that come to Jesus moment, a real estate spiel. They're trying to get you to buy real estate. Could be real nice real estate. Could be in a great area. But remember, it's vastly overpriced. The principals are bringing you and showing you real estate they bought for 10 cents on the dollar. And now they've placed their seal of approval on it. And now you're going to pay a buck. Oh, and they'll try to sell agricultural schemes to you, too. You know, pineapple, teak, avocado, and coffee plantations. Well, it all looks glossy, good, and profitable in the marketing and PR pamphlets. But I've never known a single person who got into one of those deals who's made the projected and promised rate of return. And man, I'm telling you, those agricultural scams are everywhere. My advice, don't bite. 80% of them will never make a dime. Isn't it funny how they're almost always marketed to gringos and the Latinos never put any skin in the game themselves? Besides that, you think big rags like International Living, who've got dozens if not hundreds of employees to support, do you really think they could pay that overhead by selling seminars and glossy reports and pamphlets? It's the condos, the real estate, and the agricultural development projects, dummy. You know, I could read email after email from people who've reported back to me after being at one of those seminars, and man, it's all a canned formula, and everyone walks away just a little bit disappointed. Wait a minute, let me dig into my email pile and pull out one of these for you. This is from George in Michigan. He says, I've been to International Living, Live and Invest Overseas, and other seminars, which turned out to be thinly disguised investment seminars, directed specifically at naive expat gonna-bes and wannabes. He says, never forget, they're not your friends. They're not your good buddies. They are for-profit enterprises. And if you look like you're not interested in investing with them, they won't have time for you. They'll give you the brush off. Sure, they can provide a lot of good information in their blurbs and pamphlets, but you can get all that on the internet. On the other hand, people seem to forget that they're selling conferences, books, insider services, and real estate. That's the golden goose for companies like International Living. He says, that's why anyone who signs up for their e-letters and subscribe to their magazines and special reports should understand and realize they aren't intended to be objective clearinghouses of information. They've got a very effective marketing department that leads you towards buying real estate and investing in agricultural projects. Projects they have a huge interest in themselves. And regarding getting expat information on social media like Twitter or Facebook, the thing is, George says, if you're a prospective expat gonna be or wannabe, how can you trust someone on social media you've never met? George says, in fact, I would suggest the last person whose opinion you should trust about being an expat is someone who sits on his dead ass all day in front of a computer monitor. The vast majority of people giving tips and pointers and writing on the expat subject are not out there experiencing expat life themselves, or probably not any life at all, frankly. Many have only been in and out of Latin America for a very short time. Yet, anybody who's been in Tulum for a month thinks he's an expert. And suddenly, boom, they've got an expat blog. And some people, once they come down to Latin America, they've got no hobbies and they get bored rather quickly. And the easiest way to get unbored is to start blogging about being an expert expat. And soon enough, you'll get a little following and all the serotonin rushes that come with the likes, the texts, and the banter. That's how uninteresting slugs and couch potatoes become almost famous. Have you seen TikTok lately? Then George says, understand that Twitter and local Facebook pages for expats and gringos. You shouldn't trust a lot of the people on there. Sure, they're good for getting references for restaurants, buying used cars and refrigerators, and sometimes for making like-minded friends. But for anything legal or technical, as for advice and information, they shouldn't be trusted, since you never know how many of these guys are out there to get their 15 minutes of fame and are basically BSers in love with their own voices and texts. Most of these guys have been down only a short period of time and are flying by the seat of their pants. Then he says, as for Twitter and Facebook, they certainly aren't places for serious discussions about anything. All right, that was George from deep in the email pile. Which reminds me of Ernie Hemingway's cardinal rule. You know, he lived in Cuba a long, long time. He said, always keep your bullshit detector on high. Thing is, when you're down here as a newbie, how do you know? Which brings us to this email by Mr. G, who's been living in Latin America for 5 years now. He said, Johnny, I came down to Central America a couple years back and I love it. But you have to understand a few things. There will be an expat honeymoon and it will end. At first, he says, like me, you'll be enthralled with the scenery, the culture, the food, the pageantry, you name it. Everything, I mean everything, including taking a walk out in your backyard, will be a new adventure. You'll get excited about things on a daily, even hourly basis, and that's a good thing. Especially if you're coming from a boring, rudderless life up in the States. But for many, if not most of us who come down, the gringo honeymoon's like lust at first sight. You know how that usually turns out. You must be realistic and understand that the bloom eventually fades from the rose. Soon enough, you'll get back down to the real business of life and all its little inconveniences. He says, at some point, after a couple of months, you realize the basics of life don't change much, no matter where you are. There's still bills to pay, the traffic pisses you off, you get hangovers when you drink too much. And there will come a time, it happened to me about 5 months in, he says, when I said to myself, have I lost my mind? Why did I come down here? That's when you start to think about how your friends and family back home told you it was a bad idea. And that's the point when a lot of us expat newbies, we have a long come to Jesus moment with ourselves. We get stubborn, we get tough, and say to ourselves, I'm not going back to Cincinnati with my tail between my legs. Then pride, stubbornness, and sometimes embarrassment kicks in. Though I came alone and my Spanish sucked. Couples, I've noticed, seem to fare better when that come-to-Jesus moment arrives. You've got someone to lean on in those moments of doubt. So yes, you will question your sanity, but imagine the people you left back home and what their world has turned into in the last couple years. They have 1,000 more reasons to question their sanity than you ever will. Because you escaped, pal, and they didn't. Then he says, I've learned a good lesson, not to compare everything down here with the things and the way things were back in Cincinnati. Though it's true, he says, even after a couple of years down here, you never completely get over making comparisons. We're hardwired to do it. It's an American thing. And like you say, Johnny, an indispensable part of our gringo advantage. Without it, we wouldn't have that big advantage in doing business here. The thing you have to work on, and I did, is not to continually whine about the fact that I can't find my favorite wine or famous cookies. You have to get used to the fact that it's always going to take 5 minutes to get hot water out of that suicide shower head. You know, Latin America attracts a lot of malcontents and losers, too. People who are pissed off at just about everything. I run into them all the time. Guys and gals who've suffered multiple divorces, bankruptcy, tax problems, with permanent ties back home like loser adult kids forever sucking money out of them. Problem is, once you get together with some expats, especially the ones who have made it over the six-month hump, as I call it, it's a completely different conversation than one you might have with some brand newbies. Conversations can quickly degenerate into a complaint fest, with expats trying to outdo each other's most ridiculous story. Then he said, one thing I found on becoming a successful expat is that giving up on Spanish is not an option. If you say to everyone you've tried and failed and are done with it, that could be a recipe for going back to Cincinnati with your tail between your legs. Sure, you'll get frustrated. You might quit going to Spanish schools. You might throw your Pimsleur CDs into the bonfire or shit can your Spanish tutor. But let me tell you, it's a miserable way to go through life in Latin America, always having to have a bilingual person on hand to translate for you. My biggest fear, Johnny, and I'm over it now, was that I would never be able to comfortably get out of the gringo bubble. So many gringos I know are trapped in it, but it's a trap of their own making. Anyway, Johnny, keep up the good work, signed Kenny. Wow, Kenny, you hit the nail on the head there. In fact, I remember a couple of times being in a hotel on the second or third floor, looking out my window over the Central Park in a little Latin American town, not knowing anyone, no cell phone, no internet. They didn't exist back then. Meaning, of course, no Google Translate. There I was, all alone, clutching my dog-eared Pocket Webster's Spanish-English dictionary, with my Spanish back then about a 1. And I soon realized your Spanish has to be about a 3 or a 4 to get by off the Gringo tourist trail. That is, if you're all alone. So it is true, your expat honeymoon will end, and you will have buyer's remorse, I did. But remember, no matter how much you might want to throw in the towel, you've got it so much better and have so many more advantages than I had when I first came down. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. Well, you're Johnny. You're that adventurous, explorer, trudge on, damn the torpedoes type. But remember, that was 30 years ago, way before the U.S. entered into chaotic, uncharted territory. Before the falsies, the lockdowns, the massive stimulus programs, the inflation, the mega trillion-dollar deficits, the Twitter mobs, and the rise of the toxic wokesters. You see, if I would have thrown in the towel and gone back to Chicago with my tail between my legs, I'd have been going back to a first world that was still somewhat normal and predictable. But that was then. Consider this. If you come down to Latin America as a newbie and decide to throw in the towel for whatever reason, you'd have to seriously ask yourself, why in the hell would I ever want to go back to Cleveland or Milwaukee? Besides that, these days, here in Latin America, you got all the big box stores, all the franchises you know, love, and hate are down here. You got fast, reliable internet, extremely cheap, great healthcare, fantastic markets with unlimited produce, and, for better or for worse, Amazon and all the e-stores, too. Not to mention what newbies often call their lifeline, Google Translate. In other words, talk about a soft landing. To me, looking back, it almost seems too easy to get the hell out of Dodge. Oh, and one thing that's not often mentioned, but when I first moved down to Latin America, one of the unexpected pleasures of being down here was that I was able to eliminate all those time vampires and negative people all of us seem to accumulate in our lives somewhere along the line. I know you're thinking of a few right now. Well, it's not as if we seek those people out. They seem to find us. Or they might be relatives, or childhood friends, or next-door neighbors. Don't get me wrong, there are lots of them down here in Latin America, too. But I found, and you will too, there's no better way to start with a fresh slate than to get the hell out of Dodge. It's a way to rewrite and recreate your own life, if you want to, and it's a way to get really anonymous and get back under that radar again. Problem is, I've seen so many gringos and expats who've had the chance to start all over. You know, dump all the toxic social media hangers-on. Coming on down was their chance to start fresh. And they screwed it up. They dove right back into social media. Found a new bunch of toxic friends online. Hooked up with a bunch of toxic gringo Facebook expat groups. Ew. So, all you newbies and wannabes, think about it. Don't let that happen to you. It's easy to see how it happens, of course, because gringos who come down, especially if their Spanish completely sucks, they crave other gringo company. And where do they find these creatures? On gringo expat Facebook and Twitter meetup groups online. And for your information, I'm not on any Twitter or Facebook group. I'm not on Instagram, none of it. I know some of you are thinking, what a Luddite. How can he survive? Pretty damn well, thank you very much. Funny thing is, people tell me all the time how the Facebook and Twitter mob are beating me up all the time, saying all kinds of crap about me. Yeah, me, Johnny. There are toxic wokester blog sites attacking me all the time. They say I'm a bigot, a racist, I attack Latin people, I'm a Zionist, an anti-Zionist, sexist, anti-LGBTWTF, I'm a white supremacist, I dodged the draft even though there isn't one, the alphabet agencies are after me, been married and divorced 7 or 8 times, I teach gringos and expats how to take advantage of Latinos, and I eat their children and drink their blood. No way, man, it's too salty. So, how much do I pay attention to that stuff? Well, everyone who's on the internet who has any kind of presence at all, and I've got millions of downloads, they have the toxic wokesters and Twitter mobs after them. Comes with the territory. Thing is, and I've said this many times before, 99% of the haters out there have never been to Latin America. They've never stepped foot down here, except maybe to Cancun. And that's not Latin America. And they've got their version of what it's like down here from other Twitter fools who've never had any boots on the ground either. Funny thing, too, I've been doing seminars for around 11 years now, and I've always had a number of repeat offenders. How can you explain that? That sort of says it all, doesn't it? And should close the case on the haters, but it won't. Because, you know, the Twitter mob will say all kinds of things on Twitter they'd never say to your face because they'd get a broken nose or worse out of it. Now, if there was such a thing as a repeat offender Twitter account or repeat offender Facebook site, believe me, that would shut up the fakers and the haters in a hurry. But they do need something to be offended about, and the truth is not kind. It's often offensive. But I suspect the hate will keep coming as the wokesters and boomerang millennials, woke Gen Xers too, burn the midnight oil in their mommy's basements. Even sadder is the fact that most entitled wokesters are addicted to freebies and money for nothing. All of them counting on inheriting the house when their baby boomer parents croak. What a twisted world those wokesters live in, huh? But back to that expat honeymoon thing. The thing is, first thing you want to do when you come down to Latin America is develop a network. Gringos and expats who've been around. Ones that are bilingual or close to it. People you can depend on. People who live in and around the area you're going to relocate in. Real new friends with a lot of knowledge. You can't put a price on that. Oh, and the latest thing I see, which is kind of infuriating, is so many gringos and expats, almost always newbies, become addicted to Google Translate. Not good. Oh, and by the way, about repeat offenders, you come back a second, third, fourth time. Yep, some people have come 4 different times to the seminar. Well, we always like to see our new friends again. So when you come back again, you get $1,000 off the regular seminar price. But you knew that already, right? By the way, just looking at this article out of MarketWatch, it says 60% of Americans making $40,000 a year or more live paycheck to paycheck. Seems hard to believe, huh? But, you know, there's this thing called lifestyle creep, and it's very real. You've probably experienced it. I have. When your income increases, so does your real and frivolous spending, too. It can happen so gradually and almost harmlessly that it's hard to notice until it gets out of control. For example, just think about Starbucks. Now, I've got 2 sisters that are absolutely addicted to it. They spend at least $6 a day on some kind of mocha frappa latte java. Now, take $6 by 360 days, give or take. That, my friends, is over $2,000 a year. And guess what? That's very close to the yearly minimum wage in most all Latin American countries. Of course, in the States, when you hit a certain income, 60, 70, 80, 100 grand a year, whatever, you buy a new car, not a used one, right? And it's never cash, always financed. And last year, the average cost of a new car in the States, 42 grand. And according to the popular housing platform, Realtor.com, the median rent in the 50 largest metro areas in the United States for a 1-bedroom apartment was $1,600. Of course, if you're stuck in New York City, San Francisco, or the high-end areas of places like Chicago, Miami, whatever, be prepared to pay double that for a modest 1-bedroom. That means up in the States anyway, you could easily spend half of your after-tax income just on rent, even if you're pulling in 100 grand. That's just one of the hundreds of reasons why moving to Latin America makes so much sense. Where you've got beautiful 1- and 2-bedroom apartments in really nice areas, even gated guarded communities, going for $400, $500, or $600 a month. In fact, I was just talking to one of my good old buddies, Mr. B, you know, the guy that teaches English to Chinese students online. He and his family of 4 have been living in Guatemala for 5 or 6 years now, and he's decided not to live in a gated guarded community, but right with the real people. Of course, that means it's a little noisy. Guys hawking fruit on carts in front of your place at 6 in the morning, roosters crowing at the crack of dawn and all that. And he's paying slightly under $200 a month for his 3-bedroom apartment. Again, it's in no gated guarded community, but hey, the neighborhood may look a little chaotic and scruffy, but your home is your castle, and if you want, you could really trick it out inside. Thing is, you know, Mr. B is doing quite well with his teaching Chinese kids English business. So he could afford to move way on up. But he's smart and he's not going to be a victim of lifestyle creep. Anyway, just a little update here from Mr. B on teaching Chinese kids English online. Now, you might remember maybe 6 months ago I mentioned that the Chinese government shut the whole operation down. It was something like a $50 billion a year industry too. But the Chinese government, you know, they do what they want. They're totalitarian, just like they banned crypto, Bitcoin, and Bitcoin miners. They shut down the English teaching business online, too. However, Mr. B says it hasn't hurt his business one bit. Hasn't made a dent. Why? Because there are hacks. There are workarounds. He says you just work through a VPN, you know, an internet IP changer, along with a few other simple tricks. And Mr. B says he's been busier than ever. In fact, he says he turns down work. Now, remember, he makes between $20 and $30 an hour teaching English to mostly Chinese kids online. And I might add, tax-free. So from what he says, they're back in business. Meaning, don't despair. If you had that idea on your bucket list and when you heard Chinese government shut it down, you felt like you've been gut punched. Well, it just ain't so. So anyway, if you want to know more about it, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll shoot you off Mr. B's contact info, and he'll train you up. And think about it. I've said this many times. You could live a real nice first world life down here on a measly Social Security check, $1,500 a month. For a single person, that is. That means for a family of four to live a very nice first world lifestyle down here, around 25 or 30 grand a year. Provided lifestyle creep, as mentioned, is not an issue. Now, that's not to say inflation has not kicked in down here in Latin America. There are some countries I'd completely stay away from because they have that rampant inflation. For example, Brazil and Argentina with 50% year-over-year inflation, and of course Venezuela, whose inflation numbers are in the stratosphere. Now, you know in the States, the lying government inflation figures are around 7% this year, right? The highest it's been in 30 or 40 years, but actually it's double that for sure. Just check out that site called shadowstats.com, where they calculate the real rate of inflation like it was calculated for the last 100 years or so. You know, a few years back, government inflation analysts eliminated fuel and housing from the stats. You don't use any fuel. You don't live in a house, right? But those are not included in the government's inflation numbers. Oh, they were prior to the 80s, but they took them out because the government would have been bankrupted by the cost of living increases guaranteed to Social Security recipients and government employees. So now the artificially calculated inflation numbers are around half of what they really are. But more and more people in the know are realizing it's just pure BS. If you're listening to this show, you knew that already. By the way, speaking of Brazil, I get a lot of inquiries about Brazil. The question is, why on earth would Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro tell his people in a press conference that everyone should buy a rifle? Saying, and here's his translation, quote, "Everybody has to buy a rifle, damn it. The armed people will never be enslaved." He said, "I know it costs a lot, but an idiot will tell you, what you have to buy is beans, not a rifle." Well, if you don't want to, don't buy a rifle, but don't stand in the way of anyone who wants to buy one. So then why would he come out and say such a thing? No, I'm not against it at all. I have guns. But it's an odd thing for a president of a huge country like that to say. Oh, but there's more. He says, quote, "In a country with more than half the population under food insecurity and in the midst of a new increase in the price of food, gasoline, electricity, etc." He says, "Now's the time to buy a gun." So what's it all about? It's about that 50% year-over-year inflation I was talking about. In fact, the Brazilian real has lost more than half of its value in the last couple of years. It's that malignant government addiction to spending again and rolling the printing presses. So you got a country whose currency is collapsing, food prices are hyperinflating, and it looks like President Bolsonaro is preparing the populace for further impending socioeconomic chaos and political and social crisis. You think? He's a politician, so he is a liar, but at least he's not lying 100% of the time like the likes of Nancy Pelosi, Occasional Cortex, Mad Maxine Waters, and brain-dead sock puppet Biden. In fact, everyone in that toxic wasteland known as the U.S. Congress are sociopathic maggots, which is sort of an insult to maggots, don't you think? The U.S. Congress, where God's own mistakes and biggest turds live and flourish. I know I'm repeating myself, but it really is an insult to the lowly turd. And finally, we have an email that kind of spells out reason 2447 through 89, why you really have to get the hell out of Dodge while you still can. This from a Russian guy named Karn, with a K, living in Panama. He says, "Johnny, would your listeners like a strong warning to get the hell out of Dodge from a Russian living in Panama?" He says, "Johnny, of course, it's easy for me, a non-American, to criticize the United States and the rest of the First World. I, as a Russian expat, lose nothing by suggesting that you who live in the United States, a country that's in a state of dramatic decline, should plan your exit as soon as possible. Again, I gain nothing by saying this, though I understand what it takes because I've gone through it myself, that you will be leaving your home, your job, and possibly your loved family members behind. As for me, I'm comfortably settled in my own new Latin country, Panama, and have been thriving here for the past 4 years. I speak Spanish with a Russian accent. Now, you might ask what gives me the right to even talk about Americans leaving their country. Well, it's rather easy for me because I know lots of Americans who have already left and are living in Panama. Those who have picked up their courage and made an exit to friendlier, more promising shores, i.e. Panama. Though, not surprisingly, they tend to be very disappointed and negative towards the United States that they left, even though they tend to be very positive people in general. That seems to be true with almost all of the Americans I've met here. Though most Panama Latinos I've met think the ultimate place on earth is the United States. Latinos are woefully uninformed. On the other hand, I see the same things happening in the United States in slow motion as I saw in Russia. I lived there before and during the collapse. And because it's happening in slow motion in the US and Europe, it's that old frog in the water pot analogy. When freedoms are slowly, not quickly, being chipped away, the majority of the population doesn't like it, but they adapt. So it's difficult to entertain the idea to Americans who've lived up in the United States all their lives that they have an option to escape the oppression of an overreaching government. And don't let's forget, there's a collapsing economic system and perpetual warfare always looming in the background. So leaving America, and indeed leaving Russia as I did, was a lonely pursuit. For anyone to actually raise himself up to see the forest for the trees is in itself a major feat. Then to actually conceive of and then plan an actual exit to greener pastures is an even harder one. In total, it took 4 years of planning for me to get out of Russia. That's not to say that the U.S. is alone in its deterioration towards a totalitarian state. The countries of the EU and many others of the former free world are also in great decline. However, the U.S. and the U.K. do lead the way in their Orwellian surveillance techniques. At this point, the U.S. government does not even deny its heavy surveillance. In Orwellian tradition, they merely state, quote, "If you've got nothing to hide, you need not fear your government." And just as in the book 1984, fear of your government is exactly the point. I know from all those years living in Russia, people who live in fear are easily controlled. They stay put and take whatever is dished out. And the public educational system ties it all together in a nice Orwellian knot. In the end, Johnny, I rather like and admire the Americans I've met in Panama. And almost none of them are merely visitors or popping back and forth to the States. Most all of them have made Panama their permanent home. Then he finishes up, "P.S. Johnny, I'm no admirer of Mr. Putin, though I have many Russian friends who are neutral, or at least are thinking, what's the alternative? Signed, Mr. K." Well, thanks for that, Mr. K. Who'd have thunk, even Russians listen to this show.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.